All right, we almost finished nervous system. Not quite. I have a couple more slides left. But we were talking about cerebrospinal fluid and the fact that it moves through all the spaces, the four brain ventricles plus the central canal of the spinal cord. We see that in slide 33. We already talked about it a little bit. What I didn't say, though, I don't think, is that, well, let me ask you, what are the cells that line the spaces called? Ependymal cells. Those are neuroglial cells of the central nervous system, but they specialize in forming that lining, like an epithelium on the inner surface. And they're a special collection of ependymal cells located in just a couple areas, and you see them in red in this slide. Those ependymal cells specifically make up what are called choroid plexuses. Each of these is a choroid plexus. Choroid, by the way, means like the chorion. The chorion has nothing to do with the brain. The chorion is part of the placenta. But they named this choroid because it looks texturally like the choroid in appearance. Nothing to do with it. But anyway, the choroid plexus is the name for just these particular ependymal cells. There are ependymal cells lining the entire space. But those choroid plexus cells have the extra duty beyond forming the lining of actually creating and secreting the cerebrospinal fluid. So they're continuously adding a little bit more. And of course, that means you have to be taking up some or getting rid of it somewhere else. Otherwise, it would build up the pressure and it would kill you, right? But the fact that it's continuously being added is the main reason why it circulates. Continuously adding it at the choroid plexuses, and that squeezes it forward through the various spaces. But as you see up on the superior part of the brain, there are places where it's going to exit the system. I talked about the spaces internally, but there's also a space filled with cerebrospinal fluid around the outside of the brain. So the brain has cushioning inside, that's the internal space of the ventricles, but it also has a liquid cushion outside. You know, when you hit your head, that really protects you because the brain pushes on that fluid rather than directly on the skull. Concussions would be a lot more likely without that outer fluid. But that outer fluid, once it reaches there, eventually leaves that space through places that are called arachnoid granulations. You don't have to really remember that term. I'm just pointing out that that's where it's leaving several places. And through those arachnoid granulations, the cerebrospinal fluid enters a big blood vessel called a sinus. That's the dark blue space right there. And then once it's in there, it's part of the bloodstream. So that's where it's continuously being taken out. It's continuously being added by the choroid plexuses and then drained at the same rate. So if things go normally, the pressure doesn't build up and it circulates through all these spaces, making it fresh all the time, basically. Well, we've spent time up to now in the central nervous system, which is brain and spinal cord, but now let's look a little bit more at the peripheral nervous system. There isn't as much to say about it. But the peripheral nervous system, of course, is everything in the nervous system other than the brain and spinal cord. And it's made up of nerves. This picture corresponds well to a similar picture we looked at when we looked at whole muscles. Remember that the bundling of whole muscles, the whole muscle itself is a bundle of big things, which are called fascicles. And then those fascicles, each one of those is a bundle of things. Well, similar situation here. This whole thing is a nerve. A nerve is a bundle of fascicles. So there are muscle fascicles and there are nerve fascicles. Which makes sense because fascicle just means bundle. And so one fascicle is shown here in detail, but all of these are fascicles. And just like in the muscle cell, in the whole muscle, the fascicles are bundles of cells, right? Individual cells. In the muscle, they were myofibers. Well, in here, they are nerve fibers, which is just another name for a neuron. Okay, so one individual neuron, and specifically the axon is labeled because that's the long part of the neuron. So the, if you think of the nerve as a cable, the fibers, the individual fibers, are mostly the axon of the neurons. That's what makes up a neuron. And also, just like in the whole muscle, there's individual wrapping around each of these levels. So you remember the words in the whole muscle, there was epimysium, paramysium, and endomysium. Remember those three layers? Well, same things here, except it's not mysium, because M-Y-S means muscle, right? Instead, around the entire nerve, you have epineurium. Around each fascicle, you have perineurium. And then around each individual axon, each cell, you have endoneurium. So exactly the same prefixes are used, it's just neurium instead of mysium. Now that one individual axon is pulled out to show it in detail, and notice that it's an example of a myelinated axon. So what causes that myelination? What kind of neuroglia are responsible for myelination? Exactly, Schwann cells. We're in this peripheral nervous system, not the central nervous system. So it's not an oligodendrocyte. Oligodendrocytes myelinate axons in the central nervous system. Doing the same job in the peripheral nervous system are the Schwann cells, which can also be called neurolemmocytes. I think I already gave you that word. It is spelled thus. Not thusly. There's no such word. Thus is already an adverb. Okay. Let's go on to 35. What we see in all this, which is just one of two major parts of the peripheral nervous system, are the cranial nerves. So the peripheral nervous system overall is a bunch of nerves. There's two major categories of peripheral nervous system nerves. The ones that are connected to the brain are the cranial nerves. Cranial means of the head, right? Of the cranium. And so the other ones are connected to the other part of the central nervous system, which is the spinal cord. Here we're looking at the ones that are connected to the brain, and those are cranial nerves. And if this were a more advanced course, I would force you to memorize all these names in Roman numerals. But not in this. I just want you to know that there are 12 pairs, 24 overall, but they're all paired, right and left version of each one. That's one thing. Know that they're cranial nerves, but you don't have to memorize their individual names or their functions. But speaking of functions, you notice that some of them are red and some of them are blue. That corresponds to different directions of information. What are the two words we use to describe the two directions of information? Motor and sensory is one way of saying it. What's another name for motor information? Efferent. And another name for sensory information, which is incoming instead of outgoing, is afferent. Right. Well, blue here represents sensory information. So some of these cranial nerves are sensory only. Some of them are motor only. And some of them are so-called mixed nerves. But, like I said before, no individual neuron is both sensory and motor. Any individual neuron is one or the other. So for the cranial nerves that are so-called mixed nerves, that just means that the nerve, which is a bundle, has some axons in it that are sensory and some axons in it that are motor. But the red ones here are carrying motor information, the blue ones here are carrying sensory information. And the trigeminal nerve, which I said you don't have to remember the names of, is an example of one of these mixed ones. This is a motor fiber, a neuron. These are sensory, all within the same nerve. Well, 36 is the rest of the peripheral nervous system, the other nerves, in other words, and specifically the nerves that connect to the spinal cord rather than to the brain. And those are, nicely enough, called spinal nerves. And if you recall, the spinal cord itself, which runs down the middle of the vertebral column, the spinal cord, I didn't mention it at the time, but the spinal cord has regions on it along its length that correspond to the regions of the vertebral column, so they have the same names. There's a cervical region of the spinal cord, a thoracic region, and so on. And then correspondingly, the nerves of the spinal nerves that connect to those regions get those names as well. So there are cervical nerves connected to the cervical region of the spinal cord. There are thoracic nerves and so on. And all of these are paired as well. There's a right and left version of each one. And so that's really all you have to know about those. Of course, they are connecting to, on the other end, to different parts of the body, but they're connected at the spinal cord. That's what makes them spinal nerves. On the right edge, we see, well, the right halves have been cut off, but there, of course, there would be symmetry in them. They're all paired, but there are certain spinal nerves that come together to form web-like networks here and there. Not all of them do, but in certain regions. And those networks are called plexuses. Another same word as I said when I mentioned the choroid plexuses. So a nerve plexus is a place where a bunch of nerves form like a web. And there are important plexuses with different names, but you don't have to know their individual names in this course. I think, might be the last slide of this chapter. Here we have a wiring diagram, more or less, on how the neurons connect to effector organs. But let's recall the hierarchical organization of the overall nervous system. The whole system is the nervous system, right? And then it's split into what two parts?
Cerebellum.
No. Central and peripheral nervous systems. Central nervous system, just brain and spinal cord, right? The peripheral nervous system is all the nerves that connect to that central nervous system. And then the peripheral nervous system is subdivided into what? What are the two divisions of the peripheral nervous system?
Somatic?
No. What is it? No? Not yet. We have entire nervous system, central nervous system, and peripheral nervous system. Make that up. Now we're subdividing peripheral nervous system, motor and sensory divisions, right? Then the motor division is broken into two subdivisions. That's where you finally have somatic, motor, and autonomic. And then autonomic is further subdivided into sympathetic and parasympathetic. Okay, and so we see that those final divisions right here. Somatic motor nervous system and autonomic, that's right here. Those are the two divisions of the motor. So they are carrying efferent information, right? Since it's efferent information, outgoing, what's the final destination in general called? Where does that information eventually get to? Not necessarily. In general, we call them effector organs. Those are the target tissues. Right? And there are four possibilities. You remember the four possibilities?
Yeah. Cardiac muscle.
Right?
Muscle,
muscles, delta muscle, and...
And glands, right. The four possibilities are all three of the muscle types and glands. Well, the somatic motor nervous system, as we said originally when we talked about it, has only one kind of target, one of those four. It's all of the skeletal muscles. The only thing that innervates or connects to the skeletal muscles is the somatic motor nervous system. And it connects to all the skeletal muscles. So the other three kinds of targets, smooth muscle, cardiac muscle, and glands, are taken care of behind the scenes without you having to think about it or worry about it by the autonomic nervous system, and that's why it's called the autonomic nervous system. It has autonomy or self-control. In all of the autonomic nervous system, what's different other than the targets in the wiring, what's different compared to the somatic is that the somatic motor nervous system has a single motor neuron that runs however long it needs to be to get all the way to the skeletal muscle. But in the autonomic nervous system, there are two neurons in series with a synapse in between. A synapse between two neurons like we looked at last time. Okay, so there is a presynaptic neuron and a postsynaptic neuron, and then finally the whatever the target tissue is, which can be glands, cardiac muscle, or smooth muscle. And what do you know about the relationship between the sympathetic and the parasympathetic divisions? What did I say about the two, other than they are the names of the divisions? Exactly. They are antagonistic, which means they work in opposite ways. But you can't say that the sympathetic does one thing always and the parasympathetic does another thing. You can't say one of them decreases and the other one increases output, because it depends on the actual target tissue. But for any given target tissue that is dually innervated, which means it receives input from both divisions, that target tissue is going to be affected oppositely by the two. And so you can, you know, one will, for instance, increase heart rate, the other one will decrease heart rate. All right. Finally, out of the nervous system.